Welcome to the Sanctuary Life Podcast, where we take you through a day in the life of animal rescues and sanctuaries across the country. Whether you are an experienced sanctuary staffer, one of the countless volunteers who work so hard at sanctuaries each day, or someone who just loves animals, we hope this journey can give you a behind-the-scenes peek into just what it takes to live the sanctuary life. Now, here's your host, Brandon Feisner, co-founder of Louisville, Kentucky's Butterfly Valley Rescue and Sanctuary.
We have a very special episode for you this week. We are so excited to bring together three absolutely amazing leaders in the sanctuary world to talk about a very exciting new program. Leaders for Ethics, Animals, and the Planet, better known as LEAP, is a first-of-its-kind humane education program to reach high school students as a compassionate alternative to traditional agricultural programs like 4-H and FFA. Their mission to transform today's youth into humane leaders of tomorrow who advocate for and work towards an equitable future for all living beings and the planet. The program was founded by three nonprofit animal sanctuaries in Northern California, Jamison Humane, Blackberry Creek, and Rancho Compassion. Joining us for today's episode are Danielle Hanisch, LEAP co-founder and executive director, and co-founder of Blackberry Creek Farm Animal Sanctuary in Colfax, California. Monica Stevens, LEAP co-founder and co-founder and president of Jamison Humane in Napa, California. And Andrea Nasser, director of humane education programs at Catskill Animal Sanctuary in Saugerties, New York. Danielle, Monica, and Andrea, thank you so much for joining us on this week's episode of the Sanctuary Life Podcast. We're so excited to talk about this amazing new program and provide compassionate and humane education options to high school students across the country.
Thank you for having us, Brandon. We're so excited to be here.
Thank you. Exactly. Ditto.
Thank you so much, Brandon.
So, Danielle, to get us started, can you tell us just a little bit about the origin story of LEAP and how the courage of a high school freshman named Audori and her pig Sebastian jump-started what has now become this nationwide program?
Absolutely. I would love to tell you that story. Audori and Sebastian are both very special, and Sebastian still lives here at Blackberry Creek. And it all started back in 2017. Audori was a sophomore in high school, I believe, and she lived in Orange County, California, down near LA. And she had a urban farm on her school campus, and she was placed in an elective class for her science curriculum that was FFA, Future Farmers of America. And she had no idea really what it was about, but she was really thrilled to hear that she was going to be raising a baby pig and taking care of this piglet throughout the school year. His name was Sebastian, she named him. And around Christmas time, her teacher started talking to the students about what was going to happen to their animals and that they needed to start looking for buyers for their meat because they would be auctioning them off at the fair in the spring or early summer. And Audori up until that point didn't really have any idea of what was going to happen to Sebastian. And so instead of writing to potential buyers, she wrote to sanctuaries across the country to see if someone could help her save Sebastian. And at the time, my husband and I were running the sanctuary, and we were both teachers. We both taught middle school at the time, and luckily we had room for a pig. And so we contacted Audori, worked with her, actually went down to the fair where she showed Sebastian, and made a short documentary about all of the students there and interviewed them about their experience in the program. And one thing that really stood out to us was that so many students would have preferred sanctuary for their animals and ultimately would have preferred a more humane education program where they could work with animals, learn about food insecurity and how to help their communities with that, and not have that involve slaughtering their animal friends. And so we started a program here that was only at Blackberry Creek to begin with. It was called Keepers. And we ran that for 3 years until COVID shut it down. And then at that point, which I'm sure we'll get to in a later question, we joined up with Rancho Compassion and Jamison Humane, which is where Monica is joining us from today. and Cami Schinner at Rancho Compassion thought that it would be a wonderful idea to get us together and really make this program something we could implement in many different sanctuaries. And we renamed it, and that is how LEAP was born.
Awesome. And it is such a sad thought to hear that story of Adoree and how basically up until the point of, like you said, almost what would be Christmas break or holiday break there, that she really didn't have a clue what the result was going to be of raising this baby pig and what that end result was going to be.
Mm-hmm. That was very sad. Many of the students were in the same boat, especially because, like I said, it was an urban farm. These kids were not from farming families, and they were given this program as an elective. So a lot of them didn't really have any clue.
Yes. And the sad part is that's the first introduction that all of these kids get to that world. And instead of understanding the compassion and everything else, it goes right into, here's an animal to raise and here's what happens to that. It's that there almost is no other option.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, Monica, can you tell us outside of the wonderful, I mean, there's so many amazing benefits to this program, but what are some of the specific educational training aspects that the students receive during the LEAP program?
Yeah, Brandon, there are quite a few. And I like to think of this as kind of a three-pronged approach, because as we are all on our vegan journey, and we are talking to people out in the public every day, we capture people's minds and hearts typically one of three ways. One is obviously domestic animals. Two is the environment. And three is wildlife. So if we look at the areas that LEAP provides education and training, it mirrors, and leadership, right? We really, obviously, we want leadership for anything we're doing with high school children. We want them to be the leaders of tomorrow. So LEAP provides education and training for example, farmed animal behavior care enrichment. I mean, there's no greater joy than being able to take care of a pig or a cow or sheep or multiple animals. Vegan nutrition and cooking, you know, it goes hand in hand. If we're caring for these animals, how can we do better at home in our kitchen for our family, for our loved ones, people that, you know, we entertain? Then we talk about climate change and solutions, ocean conservation. How does the connection between animal ag, climate change, habitat loss, and wildlife decimation, how do all those fit together? Rewilding the land for native species, advocacy through education, once again, leadership. So, you know, when we talk about these wonderful high school students, they come along in different walks of life. Some of them are attracted to the environmental component. Some are very attracted to the domestic, you know, animal advocacy component, and some are very attracted to the wildlife. So it's beautiful that we can offer a little something for all, but collectively, it's so incredibly powerful.
Yes, and I think that brings up a very interesting point is, I know in another interview that I've heard, there was a lot of discussion about, you think of this program and how attractive it is to individuals that live a vegan lifestyle, but they are not the only people that you all get in the program, are they?
No. No. I mean, when you talk about LEAP, you know, here's the goal would be, you know, it would be lovely to have some vegan, and maybe, and Danielle, I'm not putting you on the spot, but Danielle might have some statistics just for the first, you know, two pilot years that we've done this. But the goal would be, you know, once the program is over for that particular year, is that there is some movement toward veganism or to plant-based eating for these kids, recognition of all that they've learned and the chance for them to carry on the message, and both personally, but also for friends and family. So that's what we're hoping for, is that, yes, they turn the page and the chapter and, you know, talk to other students, other family members. That's the beautiful part. It's the kids that we've had in the program. They're really excited. They can't kind of help themselves, you know, talking about the program and the vegan component of it. So we hope that we make some new vegan friends. Exactly.
Awesome. And that's such a powerful thing. Danielle, do you have any feedback or input there on what that has looked like the first couple of years?
Yeah, absolutely. I can address the statistic that Monica's talking about. So last year we ran the program with 6 sanctuaries in Northern California, and we did surveys throughout the year for the students to see their thoughts and beliefs and attitudes and behaviors about certain things that we were learning about. And one of them was their diets. And I'd say it was about 2/3 of the kids were omnivores that joined the program, and about 1/3 were vegan or vegetarian. And what I thought was the most interesting, you know, there it was mostly movement. We did have a couple of kids that went from omnivore to vegetarian or vegan, but almost universally, everyone made a step in that direction. So a lot of kids gave up dairy, for example, because we talked a lot about the dairy industry, and they met cows who were, you know, we have a steer here at Blackberry Creek who's about 7 feet tall, and he was a tiny veal calf from the dairy industry. And so we saw movement from all of those kids, and a desire and an interest to learn more and really find out more about those connections that Monica mentioned between animal agriculture, climate change, and wildlife. Because even the kids that came really interested in climate, they're starting to make the connection that land use, water use, you know, the destruction of the rainforest, a lot of those are resulting from animal ag. And the other cool thing that I actually hadn't anticipated at the year-end surveys were a handful of the kids that were already vegan wrote on their survey that they were glad they did the LEAP program, because sometimes they're made fun of at school, or it's difficult to stay vegan because their household is not vegan. And being in the program and around the animals and learning what they did, it just reinforced why they made that decision. And it made them recommit to that decision to remain vegan throughout what can be, you know, a fairly high pressure time of peer pressure and things like that at the high school age. So that was really neat to see.
That is pretty awesome. And I can't imagine what that's like at that age to have that pressure with so many things going on around you and so many other changes. And I know how difficult it can be at times coming from a family that is completely omnivore and was raised hunting and fishing and all of that. And everybody around me at work and that eats meat. And just, I can't imagine that pressure at the high school age.
Right.
Yeah, it can be a lot for kids, definitely.
So, Danielle, can you tell us how long does the LEAP program last, and what is the commitment involved for students?
Sure. So the LEAP program follows the school year. So in general, it lasts about 9 months. And depending on the state and the school district, most people are running it through late September through late May or October through June. And the commitment for the students ends up being around 10 hours a month. They go to their partner sanctuary, which is like a chapter. If you think of Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts, they have chapters in different places. So each participating sanctuary is a LEAP chapter. And they go there once a month all together for their class. And that's about a 5-hour time commitment. So they start with about 1.5-hour long lesson that is guided by one of the teachers at the sanctuary. And that curriculum is provided by LEAP. And the teachers get a Google Slides presentation. And then depending on the month, there are documentary clips that go along with that presentation. There's questions, there's activities for the students to do to engage them in deeper thought and deeper discussion that the facilitator kind of guides them through. And there's also articles to read about real world examples of what they're learning. And then they have a little bit of a break, and each sanctuary cooks and prepares a vegan lunch with the kids. And that's been a really fun thing to see the kids who are already vegan get excited about introducing their omnivorous peers to vegan chicken nuggets. You know, for example, we did a unit last year on chicken care, and then we had the great vegan chicken nugget vote for lunch. So we basically tried 9 or 10 different kinds of nuggets, and the kids got to vote on which one was their favorite. And that is really impactful, because then when the next time they go to the grocery store, Jack and Annie's won, by the way, that was the favorite. And they tell their parents, hey, I want to buy Jack and Annie's or Gardein or Beyond. And that was really, really a neat thing. And then the rest of the day, which usually lasts about another 2 to 2.5 hours, is the hands-on workshop portion. And that part's really fun because the individual sanctuaries get to choose from different workshop modules. And those can range from, you know, a hands-on workshop on goat care, where they're learning to trim hooves and do health checks, to something where they're building container gardens so that if they live in a more urban setting, they're seeing how they can recycle plastic soda bottles or juice bottles into hanging container gardens. And then everything, you know, moving on into the advocacy part, we do leadership training where they're working on public speaking, they're working on writing letters to their state representatives to advocate for different climate proposals and animal rights issues. And then beyond that, the each of the students is required to do 4 hours a month of service at the sanctuary, and that can be helping with educational tours. It can be cleaning barns and scooping poop. It can be shadowing the veterinarian for the day and watching what happens and assisting however needed. So we're really just trying to give the sanctuaries a lot of flexibility and the students a lot of different experiences.
Awesome. That, I mean, such an awesome program. I'm still trying to figure out how I can go back to high school and be involved in and leave now because I feel like I missed out on something there. And there have been a lot of life changes a lot sooner in life than if I would have been. Monica, there are like you talked about before, a lot of amazing education aspects, the training, but those aren't the only amazing benefits for students that participate in LEAP. One of those benefits are the scholarships that they have the ability to apply for at the end of the year. Can you tell us a little more information about that?
Sure. So we get into the second semester, you know, after the holidays, starting in January. And the LEAPers, that's what we call them affectionately, the LEAPers are presented with an option to complete an independent project. So the nice thing is these projects can be done remotely. So, you know, they don't have to do additional time at the sanctuary. I mean, I never realized how busy high schoolers were until we started LEAP. And then, you know, they have their own crazy schedules. And then, you know, they focus on a central theme. And we're kind of focusing on animal rights and welfare, climate change, wildlife preservation, food system. I mean, lots of cool choices, but all within, you know, kind of the same vein. And this year's theme, kitty cat out of the bag, is New Frontiers, People, Ideas, and Innovation. So we hope students will research and showcase leaders and ideas and inventions, you know, that provided a pioneering path for animal welfare for the planet. You know, someone might go down the road of using, you know, Dr. Jane Goodall and her work with chimps, her work with climate, et cetera, something in solar energy. Like what? And I have to tell you, these kids in high school seem to have such a connection to the environment. So they're probably have kind of their own ideas. So if they choose to participate, they have to complete the project in one of three ways: a short documentary, a paper, or kind of creating a website. And they have to include research using primary and secondary sources. And we go over all this with them. So it sounds like a lot of work, but you know, we will definitely spend good time explaining this to them. Secondary and primary sources, analysis, clear communication with the theme, guidelines, etc. So starting in January, and there will be a new page on the LEAP website with additional resources. So what you're hearing is this incredible support, right, that we give to them to make them successful. The projects are then fast forward to late May, and there's a panel of judges. And the sanctuaries don't have to do the judging. We will do an independent panel. We're not sure how many scholarships yet, so we'll figure that out in Q1, depending on funding. We hope to get some more funding because we would love to incentivize children and give them more scholarships, ranging from $500 to $1,000. And the higher prize is really to honor those students who have been in the program longer. You know, year two students. We do have some year two students at the moment. So hopefully that answers your question, Brandon.
Absolutely. And it's going to be really exciting as this goes on and grows throughout the year, to where you get to the point that you're having year four students.
Yeah.
Right. And students that have gone all the way through high school and participated in the program every year. That would be absolutely amazing.
I agree.
So, Danielle, LEAP began with three nonprofit animal sanctuaries in Northern California, but this year it exploded a little bit. And what was it that inspired you to take that program from Northern California and expand it nationwide, adding more than 20 new sanctuaries across the country?
Well, you know, we got a lot of attention from other sanctuaries when we started sharing about this program running at the first six sanctuaries here in Northern California last year. And what we heard time and time again was, finally, you know, an alternative to 4-H and FFA. Like, we've been looking for something like this, but we don't really have the time or the staff or the funding to really get it off the ground at all of our individual sanctuaries. Because of course, you know, as the three of us know, as the four of us know, actually, Brandon, you too, everybody who runs a sanctuary, you're already maxed out with your resources, your time, your money. And so we thought, what if we made LEAP its own nonprofit, so that instead of the sanctuaries having to pay for the scholarships and pay for the materials and pay for the curriculum like we were all doing last year, we make it free for all sanctuaries and really free for all the students and accessible to all the students across the country. And so we opened it up and we said, hey, like, let's start a waiting list and we're gonna see if we can get nonprofit status. We're gonna see if any donors are willing to support this program. And sure enough, we had a lot of interest from sanctuaries around the country. Like I said, we actually even have a couple of international sanctuaries that want to join, which we are thinking about how to figure out the logistics around that, but we're very interested in making that happen. And so we vetted them thoroughly. You know, we came up with a list of guidelines because one thing we wanted to make sure of is if other people were taking the curriculum that we were using and developing. And by the way, it's always changing. You know, we're always adding new topics. Every year it will morph a little bit based on what's going on in the world, because we want to have all of this information as current as possible for the students. And we wanted the integrity of the program to hold up. So, you know, while of course, you know, we know, for example, Andrea at Catskill, we know very, you know, a lot about Catskill's work and very much we're fans of them already. You know, a lot of the sanctuaries we've never heard of, and we wanted to make sure that they were indeed vegan-based sanctuaries, that they were not farms or they were not petting zoos. or any other kind of organization that was exploiting animals in any way and might be, you know, purposefully or accidentally changing the curriculum or the intent with which it was delivered. And so we spent a lot of time this last winter and spring going through a vetting process and interviewing each of the sanctuaries, having them fill out questionnaires, and kind of sorting through that. And luckily we got enough funding to have, we have 24 sanctuaries in the program this year. So we're really thrilled about that. And because the scholarships are competitive and they're not just given to every student, that actually allowed us to open it up to more students, because some of the kids aren't interested in the money, but some of the parents won't let their kids move over from FFA or 4-H unless there is a financial incentive, because they are used to their kids auctioning off animals at the fair and using that money for college. And so that was sort of how the scholarship program came about. And then it evolved into something a little more fun where the kids got to do these projects of, based on their own interest and actually have a friendly competition. So that's kind of how it grew almost overnight. And we already have 19 sanctuaries on the wait list to be vetted for next year.
Any in Kentucky?
Not yet.
I don't think there are. We might have to work on that.
Yes.
Yeah. We want to have them in every state.
Yes, absolutely. And so that brings us to Andrea and Catskill Animal Sanctuary. What was it, Andrea, about the LEAP program that made it like stand out as a program that you all wanted to offer at Catskill Animal Sanctuary?
Well, we were already also fans of the LEAP program and, you know, as a sanctuary, and we just always thought like it was a perfect fit for our sanctuary. The founder of Catskill Animal Sanctuary, Kathy Stevens, used to be a teacher. I'm a teacher. Our humane education team is made of teachers. So we are very aligned with LEAP as far as our mission goes as a sanctuary, but we also take a very similar approach to vegan education at our sanctuary that LEAP does. The majority of our guests every week aren't plant-based, but we are also, you know, gentle in our approach with visitors of all ages. And of course, we want them to learn the truth behind animal agriculture, but we welcome everyone regardless of where they are on their journeys. And that's exactly why we loved meeting Danielle initially and learning more about LEAP. They want students to know the realities behind these systems, but want students to feel empowered to fix it going forward without feeling ashamed. And so we had actually already hoped to partner with LEAP in the future if they opened it to sanctuaries outside of California. And then we were so excited to join this year as one of the East Coast partner sanctuaries. We're in New York State, so we were really excited. And then practically speaking, like Danielle and Monica mentioned earlier, they've done an amazing job of making it easier to implement by providing the curriculum and guidance along the way, which we all know is super important at any nonprofit, of course. So rather than starting from scratch, like I think you mentioned before, Danielle, you know, it made it so that we could actually have the bandwidth to implement it from like practically speaking. So it's just an amazing model, and we're really, really thrilled to be one of the partner sanctuaries this year.
We are thrilled to have you. Thank you so much for joining us. I can't wait to visit. I'm flying out, Brandon, in October and going to visit Catskill and some of the other LEAP sanctuaries.
So jealous.
It's the most beautiful time of the year there, October. So you can all come visit. You just let me know. Anytime.
Monica, you can hop on the plane too.
I know. I'm going to take you up on that, Andrea.
Please do. We'd love to have you. All of you.
So, Andrea, how has the response been so far to LEAP being offered there at Catskill Animal Sanctuary, as far as number of students wanting to be in the program, as far as just the overall, like, excitement and everything surrounding it?
It's been really positive. We started recruiting not too long ago, actually, like a few weeks ago, because schools here near us locally just went back to school this past week. And so, like Monica said before, I think, you know, they're really busy getting their schedules sorted out for the year. And then, of course, as a new program in the area, it doesn't have, you know, as much of the recognition of the program and the name itself, but, you know, that will build up over time. And even in those couple of weeks, that the interest and excitement has been building. And we are really proud to say we're already enrolling our first leapers. We were so excited when the first application came through. And then because of our timeline, we aren't closing our enrollment now until the end of September. Again, like I said, because we just started school here in this past week. So we just want to give schools time to actually get it out to their students and, you know, let everybody get settled in. So we're anticipating a full roster for the first year. Once word continues to get out there and September starts to wrap up, and then we're starting our first class will be in October. So we're getting a lot of interest from local school districts and families. They're asking great questions. One of our staff members has contacts at a local school district and knows that they're promoting other programs like FFA. So she's reaching out to the school so they can offer this as an alternative. We've had a lot of prior interest from parents who were asking us how their teenagers can volunteer at the sanctuary if they aren't 18 yet. So this is an amazing offer for those families as well. We have a local teacher who's interested in working with us and their class that focuses on shaping young leaders. A teacher who's teaching a careers class has reached out. So it's spreading around. And, you know, the questions are starting to really roll in. Lots of exciting questions and possible opportunities for growth for both, you know, this school year, which for us will be year one. And then hopefully in the coming years, it's been really neat to see.
Yes. And so with the program just now a few weeks away from kicking off, you said in early October, what is it specifically at Catskill Animal Sanctuary that participants can kind of expect to experience and encounter as part of the LEAP program?
Yeah, so our lead teacher for the program, Lauren B., she's just a wealth of knowledge. So she'll be incorporating that every step of the way. Our team that is comprised of three of us full-time and then several part-time humane educators that come in on the weekends, you know, we'll all work with the students. But on day one, Lauren will get students familiar with the program. And then I think the key is going to be that, you know, she'll facilitate meaningful interactions with our animal residents because, you know, there's so much to share with students about sanctuary life, of course, and the work that is involved. And we can't wait to share all of those aspects of it with the students. But first, I'm guessing that we will focus a lot on animal time on day one, because we really think that there really is no better way to make people open their hearts and their minds to humane education than to have them fall in love with one of our animal residents. And we see it happen over and over and over every week at the sanctuary. You know, someone lays down to give one of our resident pigs, Jasmine, a belly rub and a big kiss on her nose, or somebody gets stuck in a cuddle puddle with a bunch of our sheep. And suddenly you can actually see that moment where that light bulb goes off. And they realize that these animals are individuals and they're worthy of love and respect and care, and that they don't really want to contribute to their suffering anymore. So I think for us, you know, that's definitely going to be step one. And over the course of the school year, you know, we can't wait to see who the students form deep bonds with and what they end up wanting to do on the animal's behalf or on behalf of the environment or on behalf of humanity. So of course, you know, they'll be learning some basic animal care skills and about some of the more practical aspects of running a sanctuary, but that human animal bond will be at the core of every one of our sessions at the sanctuary. And then from there, you know, we'll take it from there, I guess. So, you know, as far as the workshops that we'll be offering and who's in, continuing to enroll and, you know, what their interests are. So, you know, we're going to have a smaller first incoming class. So, you know, I think we'll be able to kind of differentiate based on the different interests and what the students are really, really interested in seeing as well. So, but definitely that animal time on day one is a guarantee. And just to have them meet all of our friends.
Yes. And once you have them fall in love with the animals, I mean, the sky's the limit at that point. You can do anything you want with them.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, like it'll be amazing for these students to, because every weekend we offer public tours April through November, and this happens to tiny toddlers all the way through people who are very much grown adults who have never met these animal species before. Of course, right? We've been kept away from them. So it happens every week. We see these magical moments where people just fall in love with a certain sheep, a certain chicken, Imogen the turkey who dances to the Backstreet Boys. Like it's just, everyone ends up with their handful of, you know, just really great stories and experiences. And it's just so amazing to see that moment, no matter how old any of our visitors are. And then, you know, from there, like you said, the sky is the limit. And so it'll be really exciting for students to be able to, like our tours are usually 90 minutes long. And while most of us run over, of course, you know, it's a great experience for students to really be able to get a much more in-depth understanding of all these different pieces and really spend meaningful time with these residents, hours and hours, as opposed to just one visit in the summer. So it's really exciting to us to think about that. Like they're going to fall in love with certain animals and their different personalities. And I'm pretty sure they'll be back to visit pretty frequently, or at least we hope. Because we know that works even just with people who come to see us once a year, that, you know, they have their favorites and really fall in love with certain, you know, certain cows and certain, certain pigs. So it'll be really, really cool to see and have that, you know, much more in-depth learning experience and to see what the results are.
And I think one thing that will be really fun to see out of this program as it continues to grow and spreads nationwide is nowadays you have the benefit of something that even just 5 or 10 years ago wasn't near what it is now, and that's social media, and seeing the impact that this continues to make on the program as far as once these students are in the program and word gets out. And I mean, with social media nowadays, things just spread like wildfire. So it will be really exciting to see what a year from now looks like after you've now had kind of a whole class of leapers throughout the country.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we've noticed that in our 22 years as a sanctuary, right? Our audience doesn't shrink. It just, you know, continues to grow over time. Someone tells a friend. Someone brings a family member. So that's exactly our hope with this program. And we hope it picks up all over the country at all the different sanctuaries and can really just become the model for how students learn to care for these animals and then how they move forward in the world and what they choose to pursue next.
Well said. Well said.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Brandon, go ahead.
Yeah, no, go ahead, Danielle.
I was just going to add to what you said about social media. We're actually creating a workshop right now for the second semester that is focused on advocacy through social media, because what we found last year is so many of the kids are using TikTok or Instagram to share videos of the animals. And through those videos, they can do some education. So last year, some of the students came up with enrichment activities for different species of farmed animals and then filmed each other making the enrichment toy, filmed the animals using it, and shared it on their social media sites. And like Andrea said, it was a neat way for people, especially their friends and family members, the students' friends and family members, to see that cows play just like dogs, you know, or that you can lay down with a pig and give a belly rub, or that you can teach pigs to sit for a strawberry. You know, they can learn just like other animals. So we will be incorporating that social media, that impactful way that social media can, you know, reach people for education and advocacy purposes is going to be one of the workshops.
I'm telling you, if you all don't require birth certificates, I'm going to fake my way into this program. I need to. I got some learning to do.
Come on up to New York or California.
You could hop to each state and do the month, Brandon. Just be a, you know, media host, and you know, you're just
doing I may your have research. To do that.
Your research, yes.
That's right. Research and development.
Exactly.
So, Monica, I know talking about kind of the overall response nationwide. Another sanctuary that we featured on our podcast just this past week was Unity Farm Sanctuary up near Boston. And they were talking about the absolutely amazing response they've gotten, to where they actually had more students apply than they had spots to offer. And I'm just kind of curious to see what the overall response is throughout the nation as this program rolled out. And what does that, I know we talked about that just briefly, but what does that plan look like to continue that expansion moving forward?
Well, thank you, Brandon. And I'm going to have Danielle, after I give just a couple of snippets, I'm going to have Danielle give you kind of a state of the state where we are with all this excitement. And and it's, you know, we think of ourselves in California, and the school year starts this time, and it's different everywhere. It is different all over the United States. So, so there's a lot of folks that are already full, like Unity, and then there's some that are like Andrea, you know, just started school, so they're catching up. But one of the coolest things that we have our sight on is getting into urban areas, right? Like, who needs it more than folks in the bigger cities that may never kiss a cow or touch a pig or hug a sheep? So another way to continue the expansion is, you know, figure out how can we get into urban centers where kids need it, you know, kids in the cities need it. So funding is going to be critical, you know? So you have the balance of all the need and the desire. And I remember when we first put it out on the press release, I had six sanctuaries. Danielle and I were cracking up because six sanctuaries just in the Bay Area, like, how do we get on the list? How do we get on the list? So we're going to grow, but we have to have funding in order to support the scholarship. So I think with the right messaging, Brandon, folks like you getting the message, the word out, everyone doing a good job, the students talking to their parents, funding's going to be critical. We need to get into urban areas and keep it going. And then, you know, once we have good, you know, concrete and a foundation after a year or two of the expansion, then we start having really impactful, you know, a national convention. We start having like a LEAP unit rolled out into classrooms. So we have all these great ideas, you know, once we get a couple years under our footing for the national expansion. So Danielle, I know you have some, you know, good information about where you know, all the 24 sanctuaries are at, generally speaking, with the
And I do want to say I love, Monica, the talk about moving this into urban areas. And that was, we just talked to a Fairy Tale Farm sanctuary in Winston-Salem, North Carolina this week that is much more, a lot more urban and doing things ourselves. Our micro sanctuary here is very urban. We do a lot of our outreach in the city. So it's amazing to see the number of kids, and whether that, when I say kids, I mean from toddlers up through high schoolers, that will come to outreach events and things that we are doing and see a goat and they're like, I've never touched a goat in real life, or I've never,
it's magic.
Yes. Or their only interaction with a goat. That's the other thing. So many people tell us is, well, the only time I've ever seen a goat is at the zoo and they all run from you. They don't want you to pet them. And your goats like run to people and love people and want to be like, they just surround you. And I said, yes, that's the difference in a goat that feels safe and knows that they're loved, and the difference in one that has just been exploited and stuff their whole lives. And to see people kind of understand that, just that little connection of these have always run away from me and these want me, and reaching those people. We had a kid here where we live, that we had one of our pigs that was out, and we were, he was playing out front doing everything, and this pig's like, why are you petting that carpet? And we're like, that's not a carpet. This is a pig. And the kid had never seen a pig in real life ever to even have a clue what a pig, like what a pig was.
Oh my goodness.
So I love the thought of getting into urban areas, because it is, there's such a need, and so many, so many students and children in general that just do not have any exposure. And until we can expose kind of the masses in those urban cores, I mean, yes, we can make impactful change, but once we reach those urban cores, the level of impactful change can just grow exponentially.
Exactly. And it's mind blowing once you tell them about where their food comes from. And then they're looking at the pig and they just had, you know, a slice of bacon in the morning, and the light bulb goes off. Like that's it. Like, you got to let them meet the animal and know how loving and sentient they are, and then connect them to the other side of it. Because if they're not connected, they're not going to make the change, right? Or the goat and goat's milk, or understanding, you know, in a dairy situation with male goats. What happens to those males? You don't want to like tear them down and crush them, but we do have to make some kind of a connection in that moment, so they understand what this is all about. And we'll be gentle, but it's important that they understand the food aspect and then the friend aspect.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well said, Monica.
Wow. So many don't get it. And it's not their fault. They just never, it's never connected the dots. So here we are. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's kind of with 4-H. Kids never connected the dots until it's too late.
Exactly.
Absolutely. So Danielle, do you want to tell us just a little more about kind of the state of the state and what that plan for that continued expansion and everything looks like as things go forward?
Sure, I'd be happy to. First of all, Fairy Tale Farm Sanctuary was one who just signed up for our wait list. So it's funny you mentioned them. So I have them on the wait list for next year to be vetted, and I'm really excited that they are in an urban area. We've also talked about, you know, Monica's not that far from San Francisco, and there are no sanctuaries, you know, right around the city. But we've talked about building the education program piece into centers in the city and starting more community gardens to combat food insecurity and teach kids, you know, how to grow their own fruits and vegetables, and do a lot of the virtual curriculum that we can do, where maybe we stream in animals from sanctuaries and we can at least introduce them virtually to meet some of them. Monica briefly mentioned the national convention, and that's really a big goal that we have in general, is to be able to reach more students than is, you know, possible through each individual sanctuary. The national convention would be something that we would have once a year, where students from every LEAP chapter around the country can come meet each other and present those projects that Monica talked about for the scholarships, but they can actually compete just like the kids from 4-H and FFA go to the fair and meet each other and compete. We want to build that community of people across the nation. And also, you know, she mentioned getting into classrooms, and Andrea mentioned that as well. A couple of classrooms in New York have been interested in the program, and Andrea and I may pilot some lessons within those high school classes. And ideally, what we want to do in our 5-year plan is take it down to younger students as well. So we have the core leadership program for the high school students, but we would love to have summer camps and assemblies and day-long workshops at sanctuaries where elementary age and middle school students can be impacted by some of these lessons and hands-on activities. And some of the older students have expressed interest in designing an educational assembly for an elementary school as part of their project. So they would then be the leaders going in to teach the younger students and really impacting, you know, hundreds of kids at a time with education through those assemblies. And maybe we bring, you know, the animals that enjoy going off campus and being social. I know Monica has a particularly adorable pig, who Obi, the therapy pig, who her LEAP teacher last year adopted, and he loved going to meet people. And I know that a lot of the sanctuaries, you know, have one or two animals that do enjoy that kind of attention. And so if we can get things into classrooms, summer camps, assemblies, reach those younger students, that's really what we want to do, because as we all know, the younger we can teach kids about all of the interconnectedness of the food system and the animal issues and the human issues. You know, we do lessons on the intersection of human and animal rights and how humans are treated that work in the animal ag industry. All of those things, the younger we can start helping them make those connections, the easier it is and the more natural it is for them to love a cow just like they love their dog. And so that's really where we plan to go in the next 5 years. Like Monica said, it's very much dependent on funding. We're working to try to get a couple of grants right now, and we have gotten several this year that are listed on our website. If, you know, if everybody wants to see who our very generous donors are for this first year and how we've been able to launch it nationally, there is a list of them on our website. And we're just so grateful because they've made it possible for us to hire, you know, a staff member, to have the scholarships for the students, and to be able to offer the curriculum for free, so that sanctuaries, like Andrea said, don't have to reinvent the wheel.
Yes, and I love the idea too of that you talked about, of the high school students creating and presenting even the lessons to the middle school and elementary school students, because it is one thing for an adult to come in and educate and teach and tell them about what's going on in the world. But when you have another student that's not too far off from them in age come in, that they're kind of all looking up to already, because, oh, that kid's a senior and all of that, and or is a known member of the community and stuff. When those students come in and present that to them, the impact goes twice as far as what it would if it was just you or I going to present that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, our last project of the year for all the students at every sanctuary is for the kids themselves, the leapers, to design a educational tour of the sanctuary for their own family. And they work together collaboratively to design the tour. They come up with note cards, and they have their education about each species, and they tell individual rescue stories, and they cook their families a plant-based meal. And it was by far, you know, everybody's favorite day last year, because they really got to share and be the teachers and be the leaders at the end of the year to share what they'd learned. And I can see, like you said, that just being really impactful, because even their younger siblings, you know, they loved hearing from their older siblings rather than just some random adult. And so I think that will be a really exciting piece when we get to it.
And just for the listeners, I always like when people say the website, so it's leapforanimals.org.
Thank you, Monica.
Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. And we will make sure we tag that in the show notes as well, so everybody can find it.
Awesome.
And the other interesting part there that you said that I just wanted to touch on briefly was that intersection in animal rights and human rights and the importance mm-hmm. there and the lessons that can be learned. And we do, it's one of the things that we love to see so much throughout the country. And a lot of the animals that we deal with being a smaller sanctuary are animals that have special needs or are mm-hmm. what we call limited edition babies.
I love that.
So, and that's been a really unique way for us to teach that to kids. And some of the outreach we've done is we went to like a camp event and I told him, I said, when you have that one pair of shoes out there, that there's no other shoes like that. And everybody wants those shoes. What does everybody do? And they're all like, pays more money. And I was like, what do they do when they want that purse that's very special? And there's only a few of them because it was a big time designer and it's unique. What do they do? And they pay more money. And when you ask about what do you do when you either have an animal that has like a birth defect or difference, or you have even a child in the same regard that has a birth defect or a difference. And the kids, I mean, you could just see the realization that it was no different, except the answer was that then nobody wants them. It's mm-hmm. it's bullying and it's everything else that occurs. And seeing the amazing connection between like, it's so crazy to see you have like cleft. We've done a lot with cleft lip babies mm-hmm. here. Aww. And so you see cleft lip baby goats and everybody like flocks to them and loves them. And they're just, oh my gosh, they're the cutest thing we've ever seen. But yet in schools, cleft lip children are some of the most bullied and misunderstood and abused kids that exist in our like anywhere in the country. Mm-hmm. Because people right. don't understand why yeah. they look differently. And so I love that connection that you said of interactive animal rights and human rights and all of the different aspects of that, from special needs to the abuse to exploitation to everything. So I love to see that part of the program.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. That's a really powerful message that you give those kids.
And so the last thing I want to talk, I know you said the website. You want to tell us what that is one more time, Danielle?
Sure. Yeah. It's leapforanimals, leapforanimals.org. And we have a very active Instagram profile right now that's been really fun because all of the sanctuaries who are currently recruiting kids are starting to post about their recruitment and their program. So if people want daily updates, they can go to the Instagram profile, which is Leap for Animals. And also the website has a link to sign up for our mailing list. And we are starting a monthly newsletter and a blog that will be at leapforanimals.org if anybody wants to stay in touch.
Awesome. That sounds fantastic. And we will get all of that information posted, like I said, in the show notes. I want to thank you all so much, Danielle, Monica, Andrea. We appreciate all that you have done to help create this program initially and then kind of grow this program. Andrea, with the expansion efforts and taking this on at your all sanctuary. We're so excited to see what this will do for teens throughout the country. And we hope to eventually connect with all of you all later in the school year, maybe, and just see how things have gone and then secondary to that, hopefully can get you all on in the future to talk about your sanctuary life and kind of the stories at your own sanctuary.
That would be wonderful. Thank you so much, Brandon.
Yeah, Brandon, thanks for being a voice for us. We appreciate it.
This was great, Brandon. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Sanctuary Life Podcast presented by Butterfly Valley Rescue and Sanctuary. To find out more about our podcast and how you can be a part of it, visit our webpage at butterflyvalleyrescue.com/podcast or join us on social media at Sanctuary Life Podcast. If you enjoyed this week's episode, please remember to download the episode and recommend us to family and friends. See you next time.